Welcome to Why Am I Laughing? The podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the podcast. My name is Ben Harris. With me, as always, is my co-host RJ Sines.
Boring.
We're your in-house comedy gurus who talk about what's funny, why it's funny, and all the different types of milk:
soy milk, almond milk, edamame milk, kale milk, squirrel milk, pistachio milk.
Wait, what?
Pistachio milk. It's like you crack open the shell, get the little udders, kind of like almonds, no. But it's pistachio milk.
What the heck is squirrel milk?
I don't know. You get it at Whole Foods, 3%.
We know what's in RJ's breakfast cereal. Today we're talking about the independent film turned cultural phenomenon, Napoleon Dynamite.
Yay! I'm really excited for this
episode. It's such a good movie. Oh my gosh. But first, we gotta go through what's going on in the world, the big wide world of comedy today. What's going on, RJ?
Right now, in the world of comedy, you can find a very funny comedian, Mr. Dimitri Martin, on Netflix with his stand-up special, Live, in parentheses, at the time. Good joke. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a visual joke. If you can't see it at home, write it down, the word live, and then in parentheses, at the time. And you'd be like, oh, I get it. It's
live,
like,
at the time.
Live at the time. This is an older special. It's from 2015. Still so hilarious.
Yeah.
He's the master of observational, surreal comedy, and he has so many little stream of consciousness, just funny little bits. And there's one that I just have been saying all week, which is, at what point does trying to kill a fly with your hands just become applause for the fly? And then the fly's like, oh, he really likes my stuff.
I've seen this. I watched this because I saw that you had this in the news segment. But before that, my only experience with him was my dad bought me one of his books. He bought me Point Your Face at This.
Yes.
And it's so, you get Dimitri Martin's style just even by reading a book. You don't have to experience him doing a stand-up routine, because he could just draw a picture of two different things and make you laugh because of just the obviousness.
Right.
I love that, like, surreal humor of just, like, taking something so literal that, you know, mundane everyday speech becomes funny because of how serious he takes it.
Yeah, nonsensical. It's making so things totally absurd, or making the absurd seem more normal. A little bit of both. He's very good at that. So check that out on Netflix. Also, semi-related Netflix news. Don't know how funny this is, but Netflix apparently is looking to expand their debt by $800 million, increasing their debt to $3 billion, with the goal, all because they have the goal to have 50% original programming, like, you know, Stranger Things, House of Cards, all that stuff, Luke Cage. Now, I mean, we're not business owners.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, but I'd probably pump the brakes if I'm the guy on the Monday morning meeting suggesting that we expand our debt by like 27%. That seems really crazy, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, $3 billion is a lot of dollars.
All right, guys, you know, we are doing a lot of great things here at Netflix. Love the original content we're cranking out. Gary, what do you got for us today?
I think we should just get a $800 million loan.
All right, I love it. Maybe lay off the El Toro Locos for a couple of days, but let's do that. Let's do that.
What's an El Toro Loco?
It's a Red Bull and tequila and a little bit of carburetor fluid shaken up and served over ice.
That'll kill you if you drink it too fast.
Not the people at Netflix. They are riding high.
But it makes sense. I mean, like, the whole concept of Netflix has totally evolved over time, where they have made their own original programming, and it makes sense to make original stuff. You're going to go into debt.
I guess so. I mean, again, we're not business owners. Thank God.
Not in the slightest.
Yeah. And so I don't know, how much debt can you have? How much revenue are you making?
We're in $50 million of debt just from this podcast.
Yeah. The expenses are a lot. I've had to sell mostly everything I own. Currently, we're recording at a dumpster behind an Applebee's. Shooing away the rats. Get out of here, pizza rat.
Pizza rat.
Yeah, you know, in New York, the pizza rat.
Most of our money, though, has been going to your snack budget, because you need gold truffled plated peanut butter.
Gold truffled plated peanut butter.
The plate is made
of all
gold
the
truffles.
Made up snacks you could have pulled out of your head. This is the one that makes the least sense. You were better off just saying the snacks that you like. Anyways, you're gonna diss my snacks.
Just do it right.
Just
do it
justice. Right, man.
Okay. Okay. I got this. Where's all the money going? You buying cashews the size of your house? Is that better?
I do like cashews. I'll give
and
you
the
that.
Bigger the better with the cashews, and also they're expensive.
Yeah, duh. They're the king of the nuts.
They're the Cadillac of nuts.
Cadillac of nuts.
What else is in the news, RJ?
In box office news, you might remember the movie Deadpool last February. Ryan Reynolds, superhero, breaking the fourth wall, super funny. We already talked about it a couple episodes ago. Okay, it should. Really funny.
I'm joking.
Already got greenlit for a sequel. Made a bunch of money. Apparently, the director, Tim Miller, has dropped out of the sequel due to creative differences with Ryan Reynolds.
Yes, that's
who
was
also a huge part in bringing this whole movie to light. So, I don't know no one knows who's going to direct it right now. There's a petition online to get Quentin Tarantino to direct Deadpool.
Which is nuts.
I don't know if I want Tarantino directing Deadpool. I mean, he definitely has a similar edge, but he's not as funny.
I don't think he would do it. Like, I just feel like he's a very particular director.
Mm-hmm. He's got more class.
And yeah,
I mean, he's gory, but he's got his stuff down. He's like legit.
Yeah, I just think he's pickier than just like, oh, somebody petitioned me to do it and I'm going to do it. He doesn't care what you think.
But at the same time,
he's going to make what he wants to make.
If an online petition triggered Quentin Tarantino to be like, yeah, what the hell, I'll do it, then I'm sold.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm either way, I'm seeing this movie, you know.
It's true. Either way, I'll give them at least $11
and truly,
on a Tuesday.
And truly, like, this whole thing is like, not necessarily crowdfunded, but really crowd-made because of how much people loved, like, the test footage. And then Ryan Reynolds, like, really pushed it so hard with the fans. That's the whole reason it got made. I don't know. I don't see the fact that Tim Miller leaving means this is going to, you know, flop it.
Yeah, and I guess I don't think it's going to flop it. I just know Tim Miller brought some really good things to the first movie and some great authenticity to the character in so many different ways.
It was his directorial debut, right?
Oh, I didn't fact check that.
I think it is.
I'll go with what you say. I'm just saying the director who's now going to step into these shoes has, you know, a big spot to fill. Because, I mean, Ryan Reynolds, I would argue, like, co-dreamed this movie.
Yeah.
But you need a legitimate director who can make sure this movie goes the way it should. And, you know, maybe we call a Hail Mary and call in Greg Daniels.
Yeah. You want him to come direct?
Yeah. Hey,
he could do it.
Rewind to episode 006. Wait. No.
That's like, the rewind sound.
Yeah, well, if they went back to the last episode, we talked about Greg Daniels, great director from The Office. Check him out.
Yeah.
Another shameless
plug. Pause this episode right now and get... Did you think you paused it? Because you didn't. You didn't.
I thought
push
you
it
paused it. I really That's thought good. You did.
Is there anything? Oh, I'm sorry. I fell for that.
Anything also, else on the news? Also, last bit of news. Space Jam, the classic 90s Looney Tunes crossover with our beloved actor-turned-basketball player Michael Jordan.
Sequel?
No, thank God. But it is the 20-year anniversary. It came out November 15th in 1996. So this November, they're going to do like a theater relaunch. Like, come see Space Jam in the theaters. And I probably will
do
that.
Bought your ticket.
Okay, I already pre-ordered a dozen tickets. And I'm having a party with all my friends there. But more importantly, I'm excited because I think definitely we're going to do an episode to commemorate the occasion.
Yeah, we have that one planned out. And I'm excited. I love that movie.
Yeah, I mean, Space Jam has a perfect blend of stupid sport comedy and classic Looney Tunes comedy. Yes, they both kind of fall short in quite a few areas, but for the sake of nostalgia, we will indulge and have a wonderful time. I'm very excited. Space Jam is very near to my heart.
I
have the soundtrack in my car. R. Kelly, I believe I can fly, and I believe in Why Am I Laughing?
That's the name of the song.
We could just end the podcast right now. I feel great about this. All right. So, yeah.
Drop the mic.
If any of you fans listening right now, think of any other 20-year-old movies that you'd want us to talk about. Yeah, and that's true. 20-year-old movies are from the 90s, which...
Yeah, that's nuts.
That's kind of crazy to me. Because you think, like, oh, it was just, you know, last year. Or not, last year.
Not anymore.
Anyways, Ben, that's all I have for the world of comedy. And now we can get on to what we're really here for today.
The rest of the show?
I don't remember what we're talking about.
Well, let me inform you. We're talking about Napoleon Dynamite, everyone.
Oh, yeah.
This is the classic indie comedy released in the summer of 2004. No one expected it to be the hit that it was. But Jared Hesch, along with his wife, Jerusha Hesch.
Jerusha?
Jerusha.
You get a lot of weird names on this podcast.
I went on to pronounceify.com and tried to look how to say it, but...
Let's just go in J&J Hess.
Yeah, JJ. it was their first film together. This was brought to the Sundance Festival, and upon the success there, Fox Searchlight and Warner Independent Pictures started bidding against each other for the distribution rights of this movie. Fox Searchlight won out, and Paramount and MTV come alongside Fox Searchlight to help distribute it. But basically, this movie is a high schooler named Napoleon Dynamite, and we follow his life through Preston, Idaho.
So, small-time movie, first-time directors, and big boys, big companies say, we want to put this out and make some money. And I don't know about you, but I remember hearing the name. Oh, I saw this movie, Napoleon Dynamite. Uh-huh. And I don't even know, like, the things that came into my mind. I still remember. They're like, it's a high school movie. You just have to go see it. I can't describe it. It's this guy. Because yeah. it really is something. It's hard to describe what this is. You're
and people will be walking
dude.
Around being like, gosh, freaking idiot.
And, like,
what?
I remember going to see it with my dad. I was in middle school.
Okay.
And... It was like a rainy Saturday or something, or just, you know, slow theater. Yeah. So like we were probably one of 10 people in the theater. And I don't think I've heard my dad laugh so hard in a theater ever in my life. But it was so perfect because it's not these big, loud, like explosive, like moments that make us laugh in this movie. It's dead silent. And you just hear like me and my dad in the theater like...
You guys were the only ones in there?
I swear, there was maybe other like five other people.
That's so funny that you remember like that detail, because I remember my friend Paul, he was like, hey, come on, we're going to go see this movie, Napoleon Dynamite. And truly, I was like a history biopic of some dude named Napoleon who like invented dynamite. I don't understand. I really did not know what movie I was gonna see. And then we started watching the movie, and I still didn't know what movie we were gonna see, because this movie, as we'll talk about, truly the plot is very minimal. And I remember that there was a dude, a bald chubby dude, that was sitting like a row and a half behind me, and he was like over like the minutia of this movie. That's so funny.
That's so good.
And it totally enhanced the experience.
The one part that is still like sound barrier shattering laughter from my dad was when Uncle Rico threw the steak at Napoleon the on the bike. It was like, oh, such a loud laugh. I would hurt the listeners' ears at home if I tried to replicate that sound. So why is it funny?
Okay, yeah, that's the money question. Napoleon Dynamite is funny because it's a dry, slow-paced look at average life as a high schooler in middle America, but put together in a quick and witty way. It's authentic, honest, and out of the blue. That made it stand out from the big-budget comedies of that time.
Yeah, I mean, what other, you know, what is that? What is the big-budget comedies of... of the early 2000s. Anchorman, we talked about that one before. I mean, movies, especially like teen movies. You could think of like American Pie, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, like John Hughes movies. These are the typical like teenage, geared towards these students kind of movies. And along comes Napoleon Dynamite, which is just out of the blue, like you said, out of nowhere. This comedy that's just so dry, so slow-paced, and so off-the-wall funny.
You're so right. It came out the same year as Anchorman.
Yeah.
Wedding Crashers is the next year. Dodgeball was that same year. Like, yeah, it really is a pace changer, game changer. And I truly believe it's because it has such humble roots. Like, this began as Jared Hess's senior project, his student film.
College, yeah.
And he made a short film called Plessia.
It was a weird name.
It has this weird P name. But then that evolved into what the movie that it became, Napoleon Dynamite. And it's so contrasty. It stands up against all the other movies as so different.
I mean, we can just start with the plot, right?
Right.
The plot of this movie, or lack thereof, is simply the camera following around, not from point of view perspective, but just each shot, each scene is Napoleon Dynamite's sad teenage life in Preston, Idaho in the year 2004, which is very confusing that it would be 2004. I mean, I had to really look up some clues to figure out what year this movie takes place, because you've got tape recorders, you've got CDs, you've got...
Most of the music is 80s or 90s.
Yeah, the soundtrack is like 80s or 90s. And then what's the song that Summer and the Girls dance to?
Yeah, the Backstreet Boys.
Larger Than Life.
Wow.
That one, yeah. 1999. So it's like, I'm watching this, like, okay, well, it's already been 1999. Uncle Rico saying his wife thinks he's stuck in 1982.
Wait, pause. That was amazing. Thank that was you. Like dead on, but also that's your exact impression of R2-D2.
No, R2-D2 is a little different. It's not hitting the yeah, yeah, yeah. It's just a solid yeah. It's
oh my gosh. It works for both.
Yeah. So whether you're the Backstreet Boys or an Astromech droid, you're family.
Or a what droid?
Astromech.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that's what they're called in Star Wars. I wouldn't know. I just think it's what it's called.
Sure, sure, sure. But yeah, I just love the plot in this movie. Like, oh my gosh, I'm having a hard time recovering. Like, this, it's so different because there's not necessarily an overarching plot that you kind of follow.
Right.
Truly, it is scene-by-scene exposition, which means somebody will say something in a scene that determines what's going to happen in the next scene. You know, he says, I'm feeling too hot, and then therefore he goes, shaves his head.
Right, right.
You know, this, you're watching the story unfold moment by moment. There's not like Napoleon decides from the beginning that he wants his best friend to run for class president.
Right, like the beginning
Everything
of the movie
just kind of snowballs.
It's just him standing outside of his house waiting for the school bus, standing there like, I don't know how else to describe Napoleon Dynamite standing other than like a pile of sticks leaned up against a tree, like leaned up against a wall, just kind of like there, eyes half closed, like headphones around his neck going, just kind of like a mouth breather kind of moment. And he gets on the bus, and the kid sitting next to him staring at him is like, what are you going to do today, Napoleon?
And he's the only one on the bus that's like over like
sixth
grade.
Yeah, he's like a decade older than all those kids. And his response is, whatever I feel like I want to do. Gosh. Like, and that explains where we're going with this movie. What are we going to do today, Napoleon? Whatever he feels like.
Yeah.
Gosh. As if to say,
no, you're so right.
Don't you understand? This is only what I want to do in this movie.
Yeah, no, he's so right. Grandma goes out for some fun and breaks her coccyx.
Yeah, I guess that's like the only part of the movie where something really shifts and causes a lot of change. The biggest conflict is Grandma, who they live with, Napoleon and his brother Kip, live with Grandma. She takes a spill of the dunes. And then Uncle Rico, which you could argue is the antagonist.
Right.
Super cocky, overblown uncle, stuck in 82.
Yeah.
Comes back and basically inadvertently, but also semi-intentionally, continues to ruin Napoleon's life in a variety of different ways. And I can't wait to talk about some of those things. But Napoleon is the center of this film, and this character, Napoleon, I want to spend some time talking about this, because he is so bizarrely mediocre. And right. that just sets up every joke from beginning to end.
Yeah.
Because he's, you know, he's trying to one up like these nonsense things like, yeah, I went hunting with my uncle in Alaska, hunting like wolverines and you know, got some bow staffs. Like he just has.
That's when that one guy's like, what'd you do this weekend, Napoleon?
Yeah. Or last summer. Yeah. Whatever he says. I don't remember. Or he's like, what do you think? Gosh. He's always got these like weird things. Like he's talking to Pedro and he's like, yeah, I took a look at my girlfriend. Tried to fly her out here for the dance, but she couldn't make it. And it's a picture of a model shot that like got handed to him at a like
earlier scene.
So it's clearly not his girlfriend. It's like this like superimposed like yeah. model shot of this girl. He's like, oh wow.
Is she hot?
Is she hot?
See for yourself.
And he answered the picture. So he's like lying about himself to make himself look better a little bit.
But like, I think what really like, I feel like it's because of the fact that this is a student film. It's so authentic. It's so true to itself. Napoleon Dynamite throughout the whole movie is Napoleon Dynamite. He stays true to his character. His characterization never changes.
Never.
Like when he's at his lowest of lows, when he feels like Uncle Rico is ruining his life, he's the same as when he saves the day.
Right.
You know, like that character is so himself. And I think that totally lends to the likability of this movie and him as a character.
Yeah. And he doesn't. And I think the likability comes from that he's, even though he is actually a physically weak, like nerdy King of the Losers kind of a character, he's so strong. Like nothing breaks him.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he doesn't care. He does what he wants. He wants to stick up for his friends.
Mm-hmm. I see that you're drinking 1%. Is that because you think you're fat? Because you could be drinking whole if you wanted.
Like he'll go and get what he wants. Like he,
yeah. He's true to himself.
He's true to himself the whole movie. And I think that's what's so lovable is this genuine character. Because I mean, other movies they'll pick on, right? So the butt of the joke will be like, oh, this nerdy character gets kicked or tripped or pushed down the stairs. This nerdy character does all those things, but he's not like, oh man, that really hurt my feelings, unfazed. Guys. He's like, gosh, freaking idiots. Like he's like,
like when like the it's like it's the one of the best scenes. It just opens on the shot. He's just standing in front of his locker, like you said, like a pile of bones yeah. just hanging there. And then a guy just comes and just, bam, just pushes him up against the locker. And he's just like, ugh, and then just kicks the air like, ugh.
And like the only sign of weakness that like he has is that he goes to the school nurse. He's like, can I borrow your phone? And he calls his brother Kip. He's like, hey, can you tell grandma come pick me up? She's out running errands right now. He's like, oh, could you bring me a chapstick? He's like, ask the school nurse for hers. He's like, but my lips hurt real bad.
Gross. I'm not going to take hers. I'm not going to take the nurse's chapstick.
Like the only sign of him like upset at like his situation is like him like trying to channel that through like he just wants his chapstick or he wants to go yeah. home.
This was almost a wacky fact. In that scene, if you watch closely, Kip is making like nachos. He just has his chips and he's been grating cheese. And every time it cuts back to him on the phone conversation, even though he's not grating cheese anymore, the pile of cheese grows and it like basically overtakes the plate. Like you can't even see the plate
That's
anymore.
That's so funny.
At the end of it, he's like, what? But he like doesn't say that out loud. It's so good.
That's really funny. So talking about Kip is Napoleon's older brother, 32 years old, still lives at home with him and grandma.
Braces,
balding, lisp. Like he is...
I just love the ambition of all of the characters in this movie.
Yes.
Like they are so podunk, but they like just talk about themselves like, yeah, like I have magic skills, like if that's Napoleon, and then yeah. Kip's like, just been chatting online with babes all day. Like,
Napoleon, you're just jealous because I've been chatting with babes all day.
That's so good.
And the best Kip line, which you will realize that, oh, I do say this for everything, is
your mom
when,
goes to college.
Yeah, took the words right out of my mouth. you know, Deb shows up. She's like, yeah, I'm just selling these lanyards and, you know, trying to get these beauty shots. I'm saving some money to go to college. And in the background,
out of nowhere,
you hear Kip on the couch. Your mom goes to college. And even Napoleon, like turns around, like, super surprised, like, looks at the door, because that's what's right behind
him.
Yeah,
but he's like, what?
Then it cuts to Kip, like, slyly smiling on
he's
the
like
inside of the door.
He's, like, happy about what he said.
Like, he's so, such a chump. And, like, he just is on the computer all day, sometimes chats for 3 to 4 hours.
In that scene, he's watching a preview, like, he's watching a commercial for Rex Kwando.
Yes.
And that is so good. That's part of the reason I thought this movie might be set in the 80s, because that commercial is so cheesy.
And then he's like, you think you'd give me a ride into town?
Yeah.
And Napoleon.
No, he says, it'd be great if you could pull me into town.
So Napoleon gets on his bike, Kip on his rollerblades, attached via rope. And is just getting pulled into town.
So good.
Oh my gosh.
And then out of nowhere comes the full antagonist, fit with a terrible van and video camera, just recording his hopes and dreams away. Uncle Rico, the skeezy salesman
from the
60s. Just like aspiring football quarterback.
And if... And the funny thing is, he's not an overtly terrible character, but almost initially with the music and his vibe and his dialogue, like the first thing you see him doing is like cutting some steak that clearly like is just the steak that they had at the house.
Yeah.
He's just like, grandma took a spill of the dunes. Like he's just like helping himself.
Yeah.
He's just that guy. You're like, ugh, this freeloader jerk of an uncle. Like no one likes you. Yeah. Obviously you're an outcast. Like, and he just... we talked this before in the plot.
Napoleon's like, why do you even have to be here? We can watch ourselves. And he's like, you babies are like, you need to change me to change your diapers. And Kip's like, I'm glad you're here. He's like, thanks, Kip.
Thanks, Kip. Yeah, and he just continuously does dumber and dumber things to ruin their lives. Like, he's like, y'all gotta get jobs, we gotta get money. He tries to get him selling Tupperware, and then he tries to sell, like, female breast enhancements, which is like really awkward because he's talking like these teenage girls and like
these moms. I think he thinks he's a really good salesman, and he doesn't realize that this is like an awkward thing for him to be pitching to women. But that's so true to his character that he just has no self-awareness. He the only thing he wants in life is to be able to go back in time so he could play for the football.
And he goes so far as to purchase a time machine. And I love how it's revealed. Napoleon comes, he's like, what's this? It's a time machine. Kip's like, it's a time machine. It's Uncle Rico's. And it's literally like a box, like a tin box that says...
With like the label maker, like
time
clearly
machine.
Somebody has typed on it. Oh my gosh.
And he's like, does it work? And Kip's like, what do you think? Of course it works. Don't forget to put in the crystals.
Yeah, that's the best line.
Crystals going,
he goes,
like,
is everything ready? And then Napoleon goes, oh, I almost forgot to put in the crystals.
And puts this like jackhammer of a like a T metal T in between his crotch. And he's like, all right, hit it.
He just gets shocked.
And he's just shocked. He's like, oh. It's the most pain you see him in the whole movie. And he's like, stupid thing doesn't even work. And out comes Uncle Rico with, like, walking. Like, he had been electrocuted in the crotch. He's like, I could have told you that. This is such a good scene of just Uncle Rico's.
I love Uncle Rico's delusions, like that. The scene where him and Kip are just eating on the front porch, and he's like, he starts talking about how far he can throw things. And he just like just clearly lying to himself, even.
Yeah.
It's just looking off in the distance and goes, I bet you I can throw it over them there mountains.
I can throw a pigskin over them mountains.
You're like, come on, man. Like
seriously?
Dude, but then he nails Napoleon in the face.
With the steak.
And he just grabs Kip's steak off of his plate.
Hey.
I'd be so pissed.
Hey. Just whips it and he falls off his bike.
Oh, this guy is the antagonist of the movie. He's a jerk.
If only Coach would have put me in, we would have won steak. I hate that so much. I feel like so many people say that Coach would just put me in. He like embodies so much of that, like that uncle that we have that still's trying to get back into high school. Peaked in high school.
Other classic characters, you have Pedro and Deb,
the
Pedro
friends.
The new kid from Juarez, Mexico, like transfer student, just immediately clicks with Napoleon because they both equally have nothing to say and yet think so highly of themselves. Like, they're just kind of the same character, yeah, but from just different worlds.
Yeah, and they get along. They're, like, stoked on each other's, like, you know, skills or, yeah, you know, lifestyle choices. And they, like, egg each other on to, like, ask the girls out to the dance or
it's
whatever.
It's so good. I love the innocence of it because, like, they talk about themselves, like, yeah, like you're so cool. You should run for class president because you, like, hook up with chicks all the time. Like, they say stuff like that. But then Pedro, like, just asks Deb to the dance, like, as a friend. Like, they're all just friends.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
And just Pedro's kind of, like, story arc, like, is so cool to me, as he's just, like, this outsider that Napoleon befriends.
Uh-huh.
And they're, like, instant connection, like, true and true. And he ends up being, like, that underdog, like, you know, vote for Pedro. How many people, I mean, which, by the way, this is the only campaign that our podcast can fully endorse, is the Vote for Pedro
vote
campaign.
For Pedro.
And it's the only political.
Did you wear that shirt to school?
I'm wearing it right now.
That's what I'm saying. Did you wear it? And when you were in high school, did you wear that shirt to school?
I had a Dunder Mifflin shirt. I didn't have a Vote
for
Pedro shirt.
I had a Vote for Pedro shirt made for me so I could wear it to school.
I think I had a Vote for Pedro shirt that I got when I purchased the DVD. Like, it came
in. Oh, really?
Like, it was the DVD that someone just plastic wrapped a giant Pedro shirt yeah, in, and it was, like, way too oversized, so I didn't want to wear it in public
because nice,
I was really skinny
because you're ashamed of your body. Just kidding, we promote healthy body outlooks.
Ding. I'm like winking.
Yes,
so I love Pedro. Everyone loves a Vote for Pedro. Everyone loves his cousins, the Intimidators.
Yeah.
Vote for Pedro. He's like,
apparently he moved from Juarez with his entire family.
Yeah, yeah. And I just love the scene with the bully, like, shaking some kid. He's like, give me your bike, give me your bike.
Yeah.
And then you're, yeah, and it's the, like,
lowrider,
hydraulic lowrider. And it's Pedro's two Mexican cousins. No words, just cold stares.
Head shake.
Just shake back and forth. And he's like,
he just runs away.
Yeah, he just runs away.
So good.
I love that. And then, of course, Deb. Who could forget Deb?
Yeah.
She's, I think, the classic innocent, like, female character. And, you know, she does a good job of portraying, like, a unique, like, non-romantic but, like, important female connection. Like, she's not just there because Napoleon's trying to hook up with her. She's there because Napoleon is looking for a friend.
Right.
And she's a good friend.
Yeah.
And he gets really pissed when Uncle Rico tries to sell her
yeah,
the enhancement pills.
And not because, like, oh, you ruined my chance to hook up with this girl. It's like, they're friends. And,
yeah,
like, he doesn't want to be misrepresented in this way. Like,
yeah,
no, I didn't say those things. My idiot uncle is just making stuff up because he's selfish.
Yeah. And I think Deb's studio, the photo studio, is, like, just so classic. She has so much, like, 80s nostalgia style. She's like, pretend you're floating weightless in an ocean surrounded by tiny little seahorses. Now gently bring your forearm up to your chin. That's going to turn out really good.
I think that's the one.
I think that's the one.
So good.
Yeah, and she just adds so much to that slow, dry, you know.
Yeah, and that's really truly the style of this whole movie. Like, it is this slowness, like, fully dry, yet at the same time, like, the editing. I normally feel like I'm not drawn to editing in movies, but I feel like I notice the editing in this movie is so quick, so sharp. Like, they really utilize that to leverage their jokes in the comedy
the
in this
editing
movie.
Is sharp cuts, but I love how it's very little energy, like, in the film itself for
right,
a prolonged period of time, and then a quick cut
uh-huh,
or a quick shot or a quick action or a quippy line kind
everything
of a thing.
Almost has, like, a boom on it, because it'll be like this long drawn out no music, just blank space
right,
of awkwardness,
like the bike jump.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like,
you ever take it off any sweet jumps?
Yeah, he just goes off the jump, zoom in on Napoleon's face.
You got like 3 feet of air that time.
He's just like, whoa. And then all of a sudden he does it and immediately just, oh, like, hits himself,
it
hurts
buckles
himself.
Right in his crotch.
And then boom, cut. We're back to school. And you're just like, what just happened?
Yeah.
It's like such an interesting style for the time. Dry yet quick.
Yeah, and dry written jokes. You know, just out of nowhere, all of a sudden, do the chickens have large talons? What?
I said, did the chickens have large talons?
I don't know what the heck you just
Boy,
said.
I didn't understand a word you just said.
That's like my favorite. Cause
and then the other guy, the old guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So the two old farmers, one's like talks and the other one's like, you have you chosen and tomorrow is exorcist.
And the guy's just like,
what?
Like, you're so right, though. Like the there's so many quotable jokes in this.
Yeah.
Like, you think about Anchorman, like, that has, like, milk was a bad choice. I feel like most of that is, like, improvised, just, like, off-the-cuff kind of
Will Ferrell
memorable moments.
Yeah.
Memorable moments.
Okay.
This has got just quotable dialogue laced throughout.
Tinny, you fat lard, come get some dinner.
Yeah.
Eat the food.
Eat the food.
Flippin' sweet.
Yeah.
Friggin' idiot.
What do I feel like? Gosh.
Flippin' idiot.
Yes. Yeah.
Bodaggit.
Elbows Rico in the chest.
You think someone wants a roundhouse kick to the face while I'm wearing these bad boys?
Oh, Rex Kwando. Oh my gosh. He's one of my favorite parts of that whole movie.
Do you think people think I'm a loser because I go home to Starla at night? No freaking way. Break the wrist, so walk good. Away. Break the wrist, walk
he just
away.
Slaps him on the head. Yeah.
Try to hit me as hard as you can. Go on, one shot.
Oh my gosh.
And I think a lot of the style is very reminiscent, for me anyways, of Rushmore from 1998 or Royal Tenenbaums 2001, which are Wes Anderson films.
Oh gosh.
And I know it, you're not a big fan of that comedy, but it is a style of comedy that exists in this world.
We haven't yet opened this can of worms on the podcast, everyone. I am not a big fan of Wes Anderson, and my cohort over here, RJ, if that is his real name.
I'm a Wes Fanderson.
He's such a Fanderson. And yeah, we don't have to fully get into it, but I understand what you're saying. But also at the same time, you're saying that a student film is like your favorite style.
Well, just think
of
about
movie.
It. You go to college during early 2000s, and what's the movie that comes out right away going into college? Rushmore. While you're in college, what do you see? Royal Tenenbaums. It's that slow, single shot, very dry. Wes Anderson is so, so dry. It's so hard not to see how this has bled right into their comedic hip.
Yeah.
And just the way they knock out these jokes.
The dryness of it. But it's dry comedy instead of dry art.
Right.
Which I have issue with.
We can pencil that for a later point in time.
I'm becoming red.
But I think it's interesting to point out in the style that every preceding event rarely has any reason for happening, right? It has nothing to do with Napoleon's choices or lack of choices. It just seems to be happening. And I think the best part of this is
it all culminates.
The very end. Pedro is giving his speech, and he goes, well, you have a skit prepared, right? He's like, a skit? And he's like, oh, no. And Napoleon, who has been practicing, we see him not really. We hear that he's been practicing his dance moves.
And not through any, like traditional story arc. It's just that he happened to, like, leave school early one day and then go to the store and see the dance moves.
Right.
Daquan's
dance moves.
Yeah.
And he gets a tape from LaFonda, Kip's.
Yes.
Kip's girlfriend, now wife. And then
at the end.
And so at the very end, it's just this moment where you're sitting there and you're like, oh my gosh, Napoleon just agreed to do the skit? Like, I don't understand. And he's like, here, put in this. And it's the tape. And you're like, what is he going to do? Like, we've seen him fail time and time again. This whole movie, he's a failure. He knows he is. And you hear, dwim, 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 dwim.
Boom, boom. And he just goes through
and
the whole
dance.
And
he just does the best dance. Like, it's not only hilarious.
It's
because
not the best dance. No. It's just, it's the nerd of the school with the boldness to just go in front of everyone and just, without giving two craps of what you think, just completely put it all on the line and just dance his heart out.
Well, and that's the best part.
With some moves.
It still is true to his character, but you have been expecting him just to fall on his face, get out there and embarrass himself and be like, oh no, Napoleon, this is such an awkward ending for you. But he dances, and it's funny because the camera's cutting to Don and Haley Duff, what's her name, Summer, yeah. And they're like giving looks like,
oh, Summer Wheatley,
whatever, like so dumb, like just looking at him, and he's killing it, he's doing such a good dance, and then like this song just stops, and he just like runs off stage, and it's got that small silence where you're like, oh no, like, it totally flopped.
And then,
whoo, everyone stands up,
rapturous applause. That's my favorite scene in the whole flipping movie, when it just comes back to Efren Ramirez, Pedro, and it just zooms in on his face, and he's got that little dopey little smile,
yeah,
of just like realizing, like, I didn't have anything prepared, and my friend in my like weakness just comes and steps up and just took me and just won the entire school over for me and didn't take any of the credit. I love that. Oh my gosh, that's so.
And it was such a weird, I don't know, maybe you disagree, but for me, I feel like it really does away with the traditional teen movie idea for like the hero to clearly have a goal or an obstacle. Like instead, he just randomly ends up proving to the audience how dynamite, you know, double entendre there, he really is. He knew all along he never had to change to overcome anything about himself. He always just wanted to be helping his friends. Like you said, he stayed true to himself. He just wanted to, he wanted things to be fair.
Yeah.
And in the end, he did just that. And just somehow everyone else is able to see that.
So good.
And standing ovation.
Yeah.
It's not only super funny moment, but also like the feel-good underdog moment of the year right there. If you're listening to this and you somehow have managed to not see Napoleon Dynamite.
Go see it.
Or hear a bunch of junior hires talk about it in 2006. Then I would encourage you to stop what you're doing and write down a time where you can carve out 2 hours to this movie.
That's good.
It'll make your heart better.
That's so good. The soundtrack, fully memorable.
So good.
So classic. Even the lack of soundtrack, like, I feel like they use that towards the style of just like the only time you hear the songs is either for the introduction of a new character. Mm-hmm. Uncle Rico comes on the scene and it's like gritty and nasty, mm-hmm, like his character. Or like explaining awkward situations. Napoleon's on the bus and it's like bleep, 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 mm-hmm, boop.
Yeah,
beep,
or beep, silence beep, too, yeah.
Beep, beep. So it's like the only, besides silence, the only time they use music is to explain a new character or a situation that you're
right,
in.
Right.
Until that moment, the very end, our protagonist has overcome the obstacle, won the election for his friend, and he takes none of the credit, just runs off into the sunset while his brother's like going away on a bus with his new girlfriend, and it's just that song. And you just see like all of his victory, and it all culminates to just his one goal in the whole movie is just to play tetherball with someone,
with a friend.
And Deb has like gained respect for him again because he helped out his friend, and that's all it is. They just play tetherball together.
Want to play me?
Yeah, that's all it ends in.
Yeah.
And then so for a friend, you are a stranger. I'm sorry, but I just leave it out and not just a thing.
We could sing that whole song. It's a good one.
It's so good. That's Napoleon Dynamite, people. You should watch it. It's hilarious.
Look it up.
And now you know what that means. It's time for the part of the show, my favorite part, where we do...
Oh, that part of the show?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just going to be honest, because you have lied to me. I thought at first it was a joke, but you have straight up lied. You're like, hey,
lied.
I have a different version of the song for Ben's Wacky Facts, and then it's the same thing.
Look, you can see right here, the file name is different. It's Ben's Wacky Facts version 2.
Right. I see that, and I'm prepared to let you play it, but I'll also let you know that I don't buy it at all.
Okay. It's got more violins.
Violin? Okay. I mean, I'm telling you, I don't believe you, but... Let's hear the violins.
And now it's time for the show for Ben's Wacky Facts.
Wacky. Not surprised. I 100%. I told you what was going to happen. Maybe for a millisecond, I thought, oh, a violin. No.
One day. You guys know what that means. It's time for me, Ben, to say some wacky facts, and then RJ to rate those facts using only baseball terms. Are you ready, RJ?
Play ball.
Number one fact, John Heater, Napoleon Dynamite, was only paid $1,000 to play Napoleon. The movie's budget was around $400,000, and it grossed over $44 million.
So I hope he renegotiated his contract.
I have no idea. He got a cool grand and like catapulted himself onto the comedy scene.
A cool grand and a guarantee for Blades of Glory.
And I'm bench in. Warmers.
And bench warmers.
Wait, do you actually like that movie?
No, I like one part of the movie. I don't want to get into it. But anyways, that's pretty wacky, especially if he didn't get a renegotiation.
So put it on the field.
So putting on the field, that's John Heater up to bat, and he just gets hit by the pitch. That's what a baseball fact is.
All right.
He just got hit with that. It's
$1,000 pitch.
Moneyball.
Wordplay.
Wordplay.
All right, here's wacky fact number dos. This movie was shot in 22 days.
Wow.
That's all it took. The bonus scene, however, the scene that's after the credits, the wedding scene.
Kip and LaFonda.
Was filmed after the premiere of this movie.
How is that, you say?
Well, let me tell you there, person in the corner. The executives at Fox Searchlight said we should add a wedding scene after it. And that's why, if you watch the movie, that scene has like the craziest different tone. Like, it's so different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does have a different tone. You're right.
The exec said we should throw this in. And so they're like, okay, we filmed it. That scene alone cost half of the original budget. It cost $200,000.
So does that mean that the budget originally was $200,000 for the movie, and then that scene cost $200,000, so the whole movie itself cost $400,000?
You just blew my mind. I think it only cost... But then if it was half, it would only cost $100,000. I didn't research it this deep.
I'm just trying to do some math.
We're getting meta with the math.
Again,
we don't
own businesses. We don't crunch numbers, thank God. But something's up. We gotta go back to the drawing board with this one.
But anyway, 22 days, the whole movie was shot. What do you rate it?
I rate it guy up to bat, pitcher throws the ball, and all of a sudden it's the guy from Rain Man where he starts seeing all the numbers in his head. He's like, this doesn't make any sense. How could this be? And then he still hits a home run. Very wacky.
He still hits a home run?
Yeah, it's awesome. Wacky fact. 22 days, $200,000. I'll give it to you, man.
That's awesome. Okay, here's the last and final wacky figgity fact. Every single plate that's used in the opening credits. Do you remember how the opening credits are?
Yeah, it's just him placing.
Yeah. It's just plates with the names on it and stuff like that.
Every single
one of those plates, those eclectic plates, were used by one of the main characters during the movie. You got to pay attention to see them, but
seriously,
they're all in there. Yeah. Like the steak one, you can see Uncle Rico, like what you were saying, when he first gets there, he just grabs the steak. That's the one that the steak is on that has his name on it in the opening credits.
So they really just did a good job of recycling props.
Well, yeah, I think the budget didn't allow it to
they
have
got that
different ones.
$200,000 budget.
Yeah.
Jeez Louise. Wow.
Pretty whack.
Pretty Jack.
What do you say?
I say this is the guy up to hit the ball for the game. And there's a runner on third, and he goes to hit the ball, and it kind of just like hits the pitcher in the leg. He's like, hey, and he's like, that's for last time.
So it's just like a verbal altercation.
Yeah. Well, he gets to first base. It was a good wacky fact.
cool.
I was just trying to get it on the revenge of the first fact.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Because I feel like the first fact was a letdown.
Sounds good.
I don't know. I tried too hard with that one. Rewind the clock.
Ladies and gentlemen, there are the facts, and that means it's time for hashtag whale mail of the week.
Yay! This week's whale mail reads, Ben and RJ, make a Why Am I Laughing Facebook page, please. I want to interact with podcast you guys and your other listeners. Do it! I don't remember saying, maybe that sentence. Okay, I get what the sentence means. All caps, do not ever change the Wacky Facts intro. Also, I'm a week behind still, so you may have already changed it and broken my heart. Cue up the great work, MJ. All right, Couple things here. Facebook page. We've got it up.
We've got it up.
Your prayers have been answered. And number two, I, although have pushed for a Wacky Facts intro change, already today we have come to understand that that has not happened. Regardless of what week you are behind in our podcast lineup, it has yet to change. It has yet to change despite every effort I have to change it. And by popular demand, we get a lot of emails. They're like, change the Wacky Facts intro.
Yeah.
It sucks.
Almost
it sucks.
Every day.
It gave my grandma a heart attack. And now we have all these medical bills. It's your fault. Why am I laughing? We're coming for you.
I'm so sorry, MJ, but next week it will be different. I have something planned. It's going to be a little bit different.
Oh, maybe a little bit spooky?
It's going to be spooky.
Like ghost theme? Okay, I'm maybe like Ghostbuster theme, like
wacky.
Wacky.
Are you into that?
Yeah.
All right.
I'm into it.
Well, you can check that out next Wednesday. Everyone, thank you so much for joining us on this beautiful Wednesday talking about Napoleon Dynamite. We're having fun. We're glad you guys are listening and having fun. You guys can always cruise to our podcast, come to the iTunes podcast app, Google Play, Stitcher. Be sure to check out, we have a Twitter page at WhalePod. You can go to our Facebook page. MJ, why don't you head on over to our Facebook page? Go ahead and like that. Then you can join the conversation. Just go ahead and throw up any topic ideas you may have.
Yeah.
Anything that you want RJ to say live on the air.
I'll say anything.
Anything except for everything. Guys, come join the fun. Email us at whyamilaughingpod@gmail.com and we'll read it. You can find RJ on Twitter at Rodolfo the Brown. You can find me, Ben, at...
Oh, you don't remember your Twitter name?
I don't. I forget your own Twitter name. You make every week.
No, your Twitter name is Farmer John Enthusiast 1999. At Farmer John Enthusiast 1999.
That's not me.
Yeah.
No, that's somebody else named Ben Harris.
Oh,
mine is...
I'm thinking of Fern Enthusiast 202. At Fern Enthusiast underscore 202. I don't know what the numbers are. Obviously,
cool.
201 Fern Enthusiasts are
out
there.
It's the combination to unlock my iPhone.
Yeah, 202. Nice.
Yeah, thank you so much for tuning in this week, everyone. We got to thank Ben Sound for our theme music. But yeah, we have fun. So if you have fun as well, go ahead and tell someone. Go ahead and grab them by the arm, pull them to you, and say, listen to Why Am I Laughing?
Gently.
Okay. If you can find a way to do that gently, go ahead and do that. Another big help for us, cruise onto iTunes and just give us a rating.
That'd be great.
Us a thumbs up, give us a sideways thumbs, or give us a thumbs up.
Actually, don't give us any of those thumbs because it's a star system. So if you were to give us a thumbs in iTunes, I'd say get the heck out of here.
Because
okay?
you don't know
we
what
don't
you're doing.
We don't want your hands. We want your stars. Okay. We're star plus. We're a star only
podcast.
We're
star hungry.
Star struck, if you will. Huh?
Nice. All right, guys.
Please.
We'll see you guys next Wednesday with our next episode, and we'll leave you with comedy, as we know it, has always and forever will be about...